thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
I'm going to come up with one today. Even though it's kind of a weird day, you know, I always like to remind you that I'm not the only one that feels when you get back. When you get back from a two-day weekend, you really don't get much done the remaining 3 days. I'm going to promise that to you right now. Is today Wednesday or is it Monday? It's a three-day work week, and really, you're not working that hard right now. And Friday, we all kind of quit halfway through. So, boy, the 4th of July falling midweek just kind of screws it for everybody. And by that, I mean makes it great for everybody. Hope you had a great 4th of July weekend. We were here on Monday and Tuesday. Did you hear any of our fine little shows? And now we're back at it in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue until 3 o'clock. By the way, just speaking of the Cubs, and Ryan mentioned that the Cubs back at home, and they've been good at Wrigley Field. We'll hopefully get back to 500. Man, if you told me after the 4th of July, we'd be hoping we'd get back to 500. A win today, say, keep Milwaukee neutral, puts us three games out, is not a lot to be real excited about. But every smart person I talk to, and I do talk to some, talked to Harry Tynowitz the other day, yesterday, in fact, and he sort of handicapped the first half of the season for the Sox and the Cubs for us. And he, like Mark Carmen, too, are optimistic we will be in the playoffs. I said, yeah, I don't want to just be in the playoffs. He said, no, we'll be in the series. This team's too good. Boy, I've been saying that all year long. There's too much talent on this club for this team to not do better. They will eventually do better. I see in the Sun-Times today the story headlined, Schwarber might be back this weekend. He's 10 for 30 with four home runs. Kyle Schwarber has six walks and an OPS of 1.193, that ain't bad. 10-4-30, so he's hitting an even 300 in Iowa. Said the hitting coach there, the issues are less physical than mental. You almost wish it was the other way around. I think the physical issues are easier to fix. They put a little ointment on there, they rub you down, they say, hey, don't forget to squish the bug when you're swinging. Stuff that a guy named Steve Hayward taught my son and maybe yours. Says here, just getting him back to who he was as a hitter all through his career, which is a really good hitter who has power. And I thought, all through his career, he hasn't played a full season yet. Maybe they meant when he was, you know, younger too. Because, you know, he's real old now. So hopefully Schwarber gets it back together. He was hitting 171 when he went down to AAA Iowa.
Aside from the record, if you told me there would be one Cub on the All-Star game.
I know.
Maybe two.
Didn't we start the infield last year? We had a, I think, yeah, we had at one point, I think it was all Cubs on the infield and maybe on the mound. I think at one point we had, boy, somebody tell me if I'm wrong about this. How many Cubs at one time were on the field in last year's All-Star game? You know, guys come and go, pitchers come and go during the All-Star game. Nobody plays the whole game. But didn't we have five players on the field at one time? Didn't we start five players? Somebody help me with that. 312-981-7200. This isn't my area of expertise, and it's not really what I want to spend a lot of time on, but thank you for mentioning that, Steve. Yeah. Here's what would make the world a better place. I've been buying a condo with my wife, Brenda, Bingo, our hunchback wiener dog, and Daisy, the dizzy, dappled dachshund. The four of us are living in what is really just a maze of boxes and wrapping paper, packing paper. And with each emptied box, I do a little victory dance. I actually paid a guy $100 today to bring a truck that we about filled with boxes and packing paper because it was starting to make it difficult to breathe. So we got that stuff out of the way. We still got a long way to go. But here's something that I've noticed, and I'll bet you have too. When you do buy a place or sell a place, you expect or you know that the place you've bought or that you've sold has some quirks about it that the new homeowner would benefit from by knowing. And it's the sort of thing that maybe an inspector catches or doesn't. Some of it is the sort of thing you need to disclose. Some of it isn't. But wouldn't it be nice, once the transaction is done, for them to then say, okay, we've got your money now. Here's something else we didn't tell you.
So the letter would start, hey, sucker?
Kinda. Yeah. But, you know, really not that, Steve. I mean, even if it was, Wouldn't that be nice to know? It's like, you wait a minute, you didn't catch the crack in the basement? Okay, just so you know.
We're worried about your safety here.
1-800-PERMASEAL. So there's that. And sometimes it's just the little idiosyncrasies of a house. You know, for instance, in the house that we sold, we never told them that there's two switches down by the fuse box. One's labeled north, one's labeled south. And sometimes they're up and sometimes they're off. Up and down, on and off. And they didn't ask what those do. You'd think they would want to know, because clearly they're labeled and they're separate switches that go to somewhere else in the house or garage. And they didn't ask, so I didn't tell them.
So sort of like when one president leaves the next president a letter in the desk.
Right.
You're kind of like a keeper of this house.
Right.
Here's the old mayor's idiosyncrasies.
You won the election fair and square. Granted, it was just the Electoral College, but that's the only thing that matters. So congratulations, you won. Now, I just want to tell you something. North Korea is going to jangle your change every single day or whatever. Or, you know, we took all the W's off the typewriters. Ha, ha, ha.
Right. I know it seems weird, but there's no way to turn off the outdoor motion light on the mudroom, which is in my house.
You know those light switches that are in my basement that are on and off north and south? I don't know what they do either. And do you know what? You know why I don't know? Because the guy I bought the house from never told me.
And do they go up and down on their own, or are you trying to figure them out?
I've been trying to figure them out. So, like, I turn them up and then go all around the house, and I couldn't figure out what was on. And then I turn them off, and nothing seemed to go off. Now, we did have on our roof a little wire that kind of zigzags along the eave there, and I think that when you get ice or snow built up, that melts it.
Sure.
So I've been under the impression that that sort of activates those on the north and south side of the house and sort of turns it off. But it never seemed to do any good. So I don't know if that was on or off. I'll tell you what, the house that we left them to has a sprinkler system built in with a timer that I've never been able to figure out. They'd go off like at 1 p.m, and then 3 days later, it'd go on at 3 a.m. I should at least have told them that. But, you know, the realtors and the attorneys are all like,
yeah, you don't want to disclose anything that you could be sued over.
Well, that's, I think, what's taken common courtesy out of the whole process.
Right.
And there is a measure of just flat-out dishonesty in the whole real estate business. I would say most of the time something is happening. This is just my estimate, Steve, but I would say that most real estate transactions involve something on the seller's part that the seller is pleased not to be the buyer on. I hope you were able to follow that.
Right. You don't want to tell everything. There's usually something, right? Just like if you're filling out a dating application, you're not going to tell them everything.
That I tend to, I have some idiosyncrasy,
drool,
some habit.
Right,
yeah, I sleep with my mouth open or whatever. You don't have to, and it wasn't on the form. Didn't say you have to disclose that. All right, okay, but now we're dating. Just so you know, this is me. That's me. So, for instance, on the house that I bought, it would be nice if they just said, hey, if you want hot water in the kitchen sink, and you may. That's going to take a while. And then, as a buyer, I would have thought, I need to either not buy this house or address that. You know, it's the sort of thing that you'd probably still buy the property, but you would just address. And maybe they would even say, and here's why it is. You know, here's the fix. We chose not to fix it, but you could. I had a drain that went real slow in my last house, and their inspector and they, I'm sure, noticed it. I don't know how they couldn't. We chose not to fix it because we thought we were always going to fix up that bathroom anyway, so we just live with it. I'm assuming that's where they were, too. But wouldn't it be nice to just say, hey, here's the deal. Here's how you got to do that. And by the way, the handle on the downstairs toilet sometimes sticks in the up position. Here's a handy fix. There's a million of those things. But nobody I think it would be swell after the close, or maybe before the close. That's got to be after the close. It's got to be after this is a clear deal. And then there's some way for you all just to sit down. Maybe you could Skype and say, hey.
From a safe distance.
Right. We don't even have to be in the same room. I can hit off at any second. And then we Skype, or we FaceTime, or our attorneys. You know, this is the thing. I don't even think it needs to be involving attorneys. It's just sort of a common courtesy. And I don't think that happens. But there have been instances where you, as a buyer or a seller, knew or discovered that there was something strange about your place. And it was only X that you've finally figured it out. What was that? There was a woman that was trying to get on a plane, and she was, well, she was on the plane, but she was a large size model. The man next to her was texting unkind things about her. I'll play that audio for you in this hour. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about what North Korea has been doing and what our options are, limited though they may be. That's all coming up here on WGN. Drew. Hey, Drew, it's John. How are you? What can I do for you?
Hey, John. Well, I wanted to share a somewhat similar story. When we moved into our home 4 years ago, we live in an old house. It was built in 1892, so it certainly has some of those wrinkles you were talking about.
Yeah.
And the previous owner accidentally shipped something to their old address, our new address. So we traded a few emails, and we actually got a chance to ask a few of those questions and get a few of the answers.
Nice.
I won't bore you with the details, but the very last email they sent to us literally ended. It's like, okay, you know, turn the door handle up to close it and,
right,
you know, X, Y, and Z. Oh, and also there's a ghost. So have fun with that. And there is. And he's a friendly ghost. So.
Really? You've had things that you would attribute to some sort of supernatural phenomenon, huh?
You know, doors opening and closing on their own, some, you know, real creaky floors. We have a toddler, and when she was a baby, she would kind of look into corners and laugh and smile as if someone was there. So,
nice.
Yeah, we figured friendly ghost, helpful ghost.
Yeah. And again, that's not on the disclosure form. I mean, it's not like meth lab ghost. You have to disclose methane or, not methane, methadone. If you're cooking meth in the basement, you have to disclose that. But you don't have to disclose ghosts.
Yeah, the inspector missed it, I think.
Hey, do you know this, Drew? If there was a death, a homicide, suicide, or natural death, do you have to disclose that?
I believe I had heard that, yeah. That's a little scary, though.
You'd think ghosts would be on that list, then.
It should.
That person's totally dead. Drew, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day. It's 119. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Hey, John, we bought a house, this texter says, from the 815 area code. And so far, you buy the house, and everybody says, oh, yeah, it's great. And the inspectors, who, by the way, should all just be taken out to a woodshed. The inspectors go, yeah, it's a good house. Like, because that's what inspectors do. You give somebody $200, and then they get a flashlight out and come back and go, you're good to go. John, we bought a house a few months ago. And so far, we have had a foot of water in the basement, an infestation of wasps. Now we're dealing with a colony of bats in the attic. Yeah, it would have been nice to have a letter. LOL. Hey, Craig, this is John. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
So I just had a couple of thoughts for you on those mystery switches.
Yeah.
In my house, I did the wiring, and I have my mystery switches hooked up to my garage door openers, so that when we go on vacation, they don't turn on by accidental car or airplane transmission or something like that.
That's funny, because north and south would maybe be the north door and the south door on the garage.
Yeah, or, you know, they were talking about motion lights. I've also got mystery switches for electrical outlets on the outside of the house that would allow me to turn Christmas lights on and off without getting out in the cold.
Boy, see, now say that's what happened in that mystery switches in my house. How nice it would have been for the previous owner to tell me that, and I didn't even know they were there until you're in the house for a month and you're walking around and go, oh, what's this? Hey, Brenda, what do these do? We don't know. We don't know. Yeah.
Well, at least you have something to look forward to and check out.
Thanks, Craig. Just still start throwing switches and see what happens. Hey, Debbie, it's John. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
So we just got through selling my parents' home. They've been in the house for 40 years. I grew up there. So as we're getting the house ready, they have an attached garage, and there's a door leading to the backyard that's been covered with shelving for 40 years, and we realized we don't have the key to unlock it. So it's a locked door. we went through the junk drawer of keys and tried every key, and so we just decided not to tell them. That door does not open. There's no key. There's a deadbolt, and it's stuck.
So how'd that work out then?
I don't know. We just didn't tell them. So we never realized that we knew we never used that door for 40 years. We never went in and out that way because there was a patio door, but it was just like right at the end, we were like, oh, we can't open that door. There's no key. So we felt a little bad, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, worse things. You know, that's not a flooded basement anyway.
Right.
All right, Debbie. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Our texters say these things. Hey, John, first house we bought, the old owners left post-it note reminders all over the house. It was so nice and helpful. Well, now we are now friends with them. That's a nice idea. You know, we moved in recently. I ordered some pasta to be delivered to us because we hadn't even gone to the grocery store yet. And so we're eating takeout and restaurant food, and we're getting tired of that. Anyway, I went and got ordered some pasta and pizza delivered. And I figured we could eat the pizza by hand and the pasta would come with forks. Well, the pasta didn't come with forks and we couldn't find our silverware yet. So we didn't eat the pasta. It was lasagna. And you really can't just grab a handful of hot lasagna like you can pick up a slice of pizza.
So did you just watch it or what did you do?
I watched it for a while and it looked good. And then I put it in the refrigerator and watched it get cold. And the next day I heated it back up when I was able to acquire a fork. It was a very sad thing. Looking at that steaming pile of lasagna, it looked delicious. Not able to access it without a utensil. And Brenda turned to me and she said, that's why in the house we just sold, I left some plastic cups, knives, and forks.
She is so compassionate.
I thought, Brenda, you are what a thoughtful thing to do. That's a good idea. Because they may not have known how much they were going to appreciate that until they, like us, were going, oh, shoot, which of these has the knives? We got to eat. And there you are grabbing a handful of lasagna, like Cro-Magnon people, cavemen, who were able to order out and get lasagna. Let's talk about it with Rick. You're on the air. You're on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hey, good afternoon, John.
What's up, man?
Hey, here's what happened to me as far as buying a house. Bought a house 4 years ago. It was built in 1955. Original owner died, and the kid sold the home. Well, lo and behold, it was empty when we moved in. And you're supposed to acknowledge the fact that if your basement floods, you know, you're supposed to disclose that.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely.
And they did not.
Yeah, they
and
never
did.
I
have electronic equipment down there, and the first big giant rain, I had about 3-4 inches of water, no sump pump, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, you know, it cost me a couple grand to get out of that mess, you know. And it's like, what do you do at that point? How do you go back to them, you know, and start a case?
Well, that's what you do. You get an attorney, and I've been into this movie before, too, and they say, here's what we can do. You get an attorney, we'll fight it, we'll get your money. That process will cost you about what you're going to get from them.
Yeah, right. So you just fix up the mess, you clean the leak, and you know, you fix the crack, and onward you go. But it is very frustrating when things aren't disclosed that are supposed to be.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I'm feeling your pain, my friend. Thanks for the call.
Gotcha.
Elif, have we found out how many Cubs started in the All-Star game yet? I believe that information's been made public. Okay, what is it?
The whole infield.
Okay, so we had four.
Yes.
And then who was the starting pitcher last year? Now you got to go back because I want to know how many people were on the field. The infield's four. I don't think we were starting a catcher. We may have had somebody in the outfield now that I think
Dexter
about
Fowler.
It. And wasn't Arrieta? I don't know who the starting pitcher was.
Just do this for me every day. Start the show with a baseball question for Elif because it's been fun.
You notice how her mic silently, just quietly went.
Mm-hmm.
So Elif, here's what happens: they have four infielders and three outfielders.
Yes.
And then there's the battery, the pitcher, and the catcher. The pitcher is the one that stands on the circle in the middle.
Okay, I know that.
Okay, I should stop teasing you. I want to know how many were on the field at the start, so you need to check on the outfield. Did you find the starting lineup for the National League center, or for the National League in the All-Star game?
I don't think so. So hold on.
I sent her an article that said they made history by starting the
infield.
Second team to ever have its entire infield start an All-Star game.
This is your Steve. This is Elif's job. I want Elif.
I was trying to help her.
No, I want to see just if I want Elif to learn a little about baseball today by navigating this very simple question: how many players at any given point for the Cubs were on the field last year for the All-Stars? It's 1:30 now. Okay, so yeah, Anthony Rizzo at first, Zobrist at second, Russell at short, Bryant at third last year.
Fowler was on the team but had been on the IR disabled list right before, so I don't know if he made it back or not.
And then what about the mound? Did we have, with those four on the infield, didn't we? Well, I'm sure
Arrieta
we had.
And Lester were on the team as well.
Let's see. Starters. The starting pitcher was not listed here because they have David. Hold on. Yeah, I do not have that information in front of me yet, but I'm sure
Elif will get it.
It's 1:31. Steve's going to get it, and that's WGN Radio News in the newsroom. Steve, what have you got? This is John Williams. What are our options in North Korea? What happened over the weekend? The president was just tweeting up a storm about it. I don't know that that gives you any consolation. In my list of unnecessary tweets, the president tweeted over the weekend, getting ready to leave for Poland, after which I will travel to Germany for the G20. We'll be back on Saturday. See, to me, that's not a tweet that was necessary. That's one where he could have done something else, like worked on the wall or fixed health care.
That's like you or me tweeting that we went for a frozen yogurt last night. Well, you know, kind just of. Just kind of an update on what you're doing.
And by the way, we know. That information has already been out. The president loves to jump in front of news. For instance, when there's a terrorist attack or a suspect terrorist attack, he'll immediately tell everybody there was an attack and label it a terrorist attack because it sure looks like that. And he likes to be the one that told you that. There's a lot of us on social media like that. But then sometimes it's just like, dude, we know. Okay, bye-bye. Travel safe. See you soon. So he tweeted, getting ready to leave for Poland, after which I will travel to Germany for the G20. We'll be back on Saturday. Because a lot of Americans were walking around going, hey, when is the president getting back? How will I ever find that? Oh, he tweeted me. Okay, thank you. He also tweeted over the weekend, getting ready to celebrate 4th of July with a big crowd at the White House. Happy 4th to everyone. Our country will grow and prosper. But about the situation in North Korea, he said, the United States made some of the worst trade deals in world history. Why should we continue these deals with countries that do not help us? Trade between China and North Korea grew almost 40% in the first quarter, so much for China working with us, but we had to give it a try! Exclamation point. So he's sort of throwing China under the bus because they're not helping enough with North Korea. And of course, over the weekend, North Korea launched an ICBM. He tweeted about this on the eve of our Independence Day. North Korea has just launched another missile. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life? I'll pause while you enjoy the irony of that one. Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. No news from the president about what a heavy move from China means. So here's the story out of Dallas, Texas. Natalie Haig is a full-size. And by the way, Steve, this just in. The All-Star game, Jake Arrieta was the starter. I'm 80% sure of that. This is information that we're still trying to glean from the interwebs.
I thought it was Johnny Cueto myself. But
so I think Arrieta was the starter for the National League last year, which would have meant five Cubs on the field at any given time. But I'm still wondering if there were ever six at the same time. But five's an awful lot. I can't imagine it got up to six. We'll keep you posted with this breaking story. Now let's go back to me already in progress. Natalie Haig of Dallas is a full-time student. She is a plus-size model and a social media influencer. I don't know her, but maybe you do. She's built a platform. It says here on some site. This is from Instagram, this story. She posts on Instagram. She's built a platform on promoting body positivity and health at every size. But on Friday, Haig's message was put to the test when she came face-to-face with a body shamer on an American Airlines flight to Los Angeles. Haig, age 30, had paid nearly $70 for extra leg room and boarded to find only middle seats remaining. Upon sitting down, the welcome she received from the man to her left was less than warm. Quote, "I could tell from the second I walked up that he was bothered," she told Today. This is from, I guess, the NBC site. "He was making it very clear, jerkily arranging himself in his seat, slamming his seatbelt, obviously distressed that I was alive and next to him. I almost asked him if he was okay. It was so dramatic." And then she noticed him putting his phone between his knees with his finger near the camera button. She suspected that he was taking pictures of her. And when she glanced down at his phone, she saw a stream of derogatory comments that the man did not even seem to be trying to hide. So at the end of the flight, I believe that's when this audio starts, she approaches him, and this is how that goes.
My name's Natalie.
Hi,
nice to meet you. I couldn't help but notice that before we took off, you were sending really horrible text messages about me to somebody.
I
have photos. Yes, you were. They said something about, well, hope she didn't have any Mexican food, and you said, oh, she ate a Mexican.
Her friend that he was texting to, his friend, said, I hope she didn't have any Mexican food. And she said, oh, I think she ate a whole Mexican.
Well, if my flight doesn't take off the ground, you know why. And stuff like that. Okay. I saw the whole thing.
She saw the whole thing. She was able to look over his shoulder and read his texts. In fact, it sounds like she took pictures of his phone and was able to read from that then back to her, or her back to him.
I was drinking and I apologize.
He said, I was drinking. I apologize.
Yeah, just, you have no idea who you'll hurt with those kind of things.
I apologize. You got me, and I was drinking, and I apologize.
I apologize. You got me. I was drinking. I apologize.
So you were drinking. Okay. And, like, do you normally make fun of fat people? Like, is that something that you like to do?
You noticed that I was nice to you when we were in the air, and I think that thing up for you.
Right. Right. I didn't want part of your table. You made me feel so uncomfortable to exist in this seat.
You know, in fairness, you probably
should. Uh-oh. Now he's going to try and fix it. Careful, fella, because I don't know if he knows, but she's also recording this, and she's going to post it for the world. And so he's going to try and, though, get himself out of the hole. Let's see if he makes it deeper. He said, but in fairness, you know where you're sitting.
Couldn't be sitting in the Mexico seat. You know, when they ask you, are you willing and capable to assist people in getting off the airplane in an emergency, do you honestly think that you are?
Did you catch that? She's in the emergency aisle. They have to say, are you capable of helping people out in an emergency? Looking at her, he said, do you honestly think you're capable of that? I've seen pictures of her. She's online. She is a plus-size model, and she's plus-size. She's not enormous. She gets around. She could probably help anybody as well as you or I, but he's going to question her physical ability.
That's funny because I work out about 5 times a week. I'm here for a shoot. I'm a model. I have a very, very large social media following.
Cool.
I've been tweeting American...
Cool, he says, wishing he hadn't gotten on this flight.
Airlines this whole time, letting them know your seat number, our flight number, what's happened, what you said. I showed them the photos, so they're going to take care of it for me. You know nothing about me by the size of my body. Are you a doctor?
Let me ask you something.
Are you a doctor? Because a doctor could know. A doctor could size you up and determine all sorts of things about you better than the average set of eyeballs. Okay, he's going to respond.
Can you assume something about me? Are you a medical professional? I would just love to know, like, where your expertise is coming from.
It's none of my business.
That's none of my business. So my body is also none of your business, so you have no idea what I can or can't do with it.
Fair enough.
Right?
Fair enough, he said. Here's the question I have, though. He shouldn't have done that. He's the kind of guy that does. And by the way, the person with whom he was exchanging texts and who was lobbing on unkind things was a female. Or at least as somebody who goes by the name of Linda. So he and this apparent woman are exchanging rude comments about this person, they think privately. So does that constitute body shaming then? Because nobody would know about this if she herself hadn't posted the video, if she herself didn't go online while she was on the flight and tell the world, oh, my God, I'm shaking. This person is saying these terrible things. So I just kind of wonder.
So you're saying bad behavior but doesn't qualify as shaming?
I'm going to finish this sentence, and then I'm going to regret it.
You are.
Well, this is his free and private speech to somebody. And while he may not be doing a good job of covering it up, she's the one reading it and sharing it. So I wonder really who's harming her the most. Okay, I'm done with that.
Shh.
Oh, boy. Wish I hadn't said that.
You want some support?
Yeah.
I'm not brave enough to give it.
Yeah.
No, but she did seem, with her subsequent interviewing of him, to try to keep it going.
Oh, yeah. She wanted to shame him. I mean, she's going to fight fire. She's got a large social media following, and she has people that will take care of this. And now he is in trouble. And he said, I was drinking. I'm sorry. My bad. I don't know if he was. What a stupid excuse. And then he, kind of makes it work. He doesn't make it better for himself when he says, I'm not sure you could actually open that door anyway and help the people out because you're too large. She's not too large. So I'm not sure what the appropriate reaction from all of us is, but I found myself, A, he's a jerk, he's a clod, he deserves your derision, but I found myself, I hope you heard A, B, I found myself getting a little annoyed at her because she wants to blow this guy up. That's her platform. She's a large person who has body positivity as her issue. So she's not going to stand for that. Boy, you picked the wrong person to take a picture of, fella. And Linda, you are no help. But I found myself being a little less than as sympathetic to her as I think I'm supposed to be. Let's leave it at that. My number is 312-981-7200. It's your turn. This is WGN. By the way, Stephen, our continuing coverage of last year's starting lineup for the National League and the All-Star Game.
Have there been any changes?
Well, I've got a couple for you just to keep you posted. So it says here Dexter Fowler, in the article you sent to Elif, was listed as a starter, but maybe he would have been the starter but then didn't start because of that nagging injury.
I remember he was on the disabled list right before, but I don't remember if he was played or not.
This has Rizzo, Zobrist, Bryant, Russell, Fowler.
Okay.
So that would be 4+1, as you may know, is 5. Mm. And then if Arrieta started, that would be 6, but wow, that's a lot. Or was it Johnny Cueto that started?
I thought I read Johnny Cueto.
Yeah. Well, if anybody has any way of finding this information out, that would be a great help for those of us here at one of the largest, most powerful news and talk stations in America.
Now, is this obtainable information?
It evidently is not,
As
this year-old information is changing before my very eyes. I'll get back to you as soon as this information becomes clear.
Is this a fluid situation?
It's a fluid situation, Steve. It's an unknown known, if you will.
We don't know what we don't know.
Taking care of yourself and your family is no easy task, it says on a piece of paper here. Riverside Healthcare can help you. With a variety of primary and specialty care providers, Riverside has just the right help for you. The kids, the whole family, with over a dozen locations, including... And you know who I'm mad at about this, by the way? I'm mad at our listeners, because some of you are sitting there chuckling, oh, those boneheads. Well, help me out. Debone us, will you? With over a dozen locations, including the newest campus in Frankfurt, getting the right care at the right place and right time will make your life much easier. Learn more about the nationally recognized Riverside Healthcare at riversidehealthcare.org. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach. I've just been handed a piece of paper with the words Carlos Zambrano on them. Not helpful to the question I'm working on. It's 1:52. Okay, back to the lady who was shamed on the flight and where your heart, head, and sympathies lie. So we'll go to, I think it's Dennis, or is it Denise? I think it's Denise. Hey, Denise.
Yep. Yes.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I don't appreciate being beeped yet, so I think I'll record that and spread it around somehow. How's that? I agree with you. I was getting more and more agitated listening to her.
I mean, listening to that lady kind of make her case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just thought she was, you know, if she wanted an apology, you know, she just sort of said, you know, you've made me really feel bad,
right,
and said that to him, and that should have been it.
In the first 30 seconds, she accomplished everything she could accomplish. She can't make
right.
him, she's not going to fix him. He's the guy that says terrible things about large people. And if only you look that person in the face and say, that really hurt me, and it will hurt other people, you should stop. You can go away now. You know, because now the other thing that's happening is she's going to try and make his life even more miserable than he's made hers.
Right.
And I see no virtue in that.
I don't either. Yeah. And I just, you know, when, like I said, as I continued to listen to it, I just thought, well, she's being ridiculous now. You know,
I appreciate the phone call, Denise. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Have a good day. Stephen, our continuing coverage of the starting lineup of the 2016 National League All-Star Team. We go to Martha on line 5.
Oh,
Martha,
good. Some answers here?
Well, I don't know.
Hi.
Hi, Martha. You're on the air.
How are you?
I have no idea.
It was Johnny Cueto that started the All-Star.
I'm going to call the area. It's going to break their heart. All right. What else have you got for me?
And Dexter Fowler did not start. He was named as the starter in center field, but he did not start.
Because of his
injuries. And all this information can be found by Googling starting lineup of 2016 All-Star game.
Hold on.
CBS Sports pops up.
Hold on. I'm writing this down. Starting lineup. Steve, are you writing this down in the newsroom?
I can remember this much so
far. Starting lineup 2016 All-Star Team National League.
Yeah.
Now, did you just come up with that idea on your own, or did someone tell you to Google starting lineup?
How did you know to do that?
No, you know what? I have a friend that sometimes says to me, oh, you should, you know, check your machine of knowledge and see what you can find out. Yeah. So
it's remarkable.
That's what I did. Yeah.
You've served your nation well. I sure hope that your search of the interweb was a successful and accurate one.
I think it was. I feel good about it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for calling. Please continue to monitor this station.
She made me smarter.
I will. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you, Martha. Sometimes I do. but I wonder then, though, if you could say we did start 5. My question was how many were on the field at any given time, and did we have 5 or 6? We started 4, but we had 5 starters. 4 made it to the field.
Aren't there now like 36 players for each team? Like, you know, they...
It is a lot of them out there.
It seems like, you know, if you were injured, you wouldn't make the team.
Right.
Now you make the team,
right,
and they name a replacement for you. So you got 2. Or if you pitched on Sunday, they weren't going to choose you because you weren't going to be able to pitch in the All-Star game. Now they choose you, and then they pick your replacement.
I don't want to complicate this because clearly this isn't going as smoothly or as easily as I'd hoped it would. But my question remains, how many Cubs were on the field at any given time? What was the most number? For instance, with that starting lineup, were they all still in those positions when a Cub pitcher, say Arrieta, took to the mound?
No.
I don't have an answer to that. Do you think 4 is the most we had of the 9 that were playing at any given time?
I really have no idea.
But no, like that does end the conversation at least.
Well, I'd hoped it would.
Hey, Janet, this is John, and you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
I wanted to talk about the fat lady.
Yeah.
You know, I think she must have nothing else to do in her life but be very conscious of her body. I mean, I thought she should be reading a book or something, and she's nosing around in someone else's business. I really think that he was rude and rotten to do that, but
yeah,
she should have risen above it, considered the source, and just let it go. He apologized.
Janet, thanks for the phone call. It's 1:57. The news is next on WGN.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Boy, I sure hope.
Here's John Williams.
We don't keep score on the big thought thing because I think we had to subtract a couple in the last hour. You know, you're up 2, you're down 1. I'm also very glad, Steve, that you did the story in WGN Radio News just now about Volvo, because I saw that story and I thought, well, it's not what I think it is, and I didn't take the time to click through.
Yeah, it's a biggie.
It's amazing.
So the way, because it's being reported in a couple of different ways, but as I understand it, when they introduce new models in 2019, so their new models will be only hybrid or electric.
Yeah.
So their existing models that they're going to keep making will still be combustible. But those, I think they're going to fade out altogether by 2025.
They will not make a gasoline-powered engine. Volvo.
A completely powered, right. They'll have maybe hybrid still.
Oh, so they'll still be, okay, fair enough.
Right.
But I was under the impression they were going to go all electric all of the time.
I think in the future, yes.
In the future, but at least all of their cars will be partially or fully electric powered by 2025. And that's not that far away.
No.
And, you know, Sweden is maybe more attuned to global warming and climate change. I don't know if that's what's driving it or not.
Well, I think they're owned by Chinese investors now, too. So I don't know how Swedish the company is anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tesla announcing, what, a $35,000 electric car on
Friday?
Yeah,
that's a good idea. Do that. Seriously, I mean,
it's going to happen fast.
I think people, isn't Tesla's capitalization right up there with Ford and General Motors?
And Apple, I think, yeah.
It's amazing.
You're right. It was the greatest funded, I think, car maker earlier.
And so then you say, okay, what does that mean? Because I see Teslas, but I don't see a lot of them. And I'm still not sure I would buy one right now because you can't get to grandma's house. They're expensive, and you got to find a place to plug them back in.
So that's kind of the thing we were talking about on the business lunch, a tipping point of when so many automakers are doing it that the infrastructure will be just about everywhere to recharge. You know, then it'll be much easier.
Yeah, right. Sure. And it helps if you can price them out at under 40. I believe the average new car is 25. You know, I mean, I guess if you got 25, you might have 30, 35. At least there's an audience or a market that will. But wow, that's an amazing story.
Here it comes.
209 on WGN. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. We're continuing to follow the All-Star starting lineup for last year's National League. We'll keep you posted if any other changes become apparent to us.
Just a few days left, really, because it becomes an old story after the next year's All-Star game.
I still think the window of wow is open on this.
Until they play next year.
But yeah. I began the show, or Steve did, by noting that they started a lot of players last year, the Cubs did. Can you believe that we're only going to start maybe one this year?
Not start, have.
And so I said, well, how many did we have on the field at any given time last year? Was it four, five? Was it six?
And Elif had that answer pretty quickly.
She did. It was wrong. But now what we're trying to do is get the right answer to that. And it's kind of tricky because it's not just who started, but then, you know, players come and go. You could have had a pinch runner, pinch hitter. So I'm not saying this is easy, but did we have five players on the field at any given time? Did we have six? That's all I'm asking. It's 210. Let's tackle something more easy. North Korea. On a phone line joining us now here at WGN Radio is Carl Friedhoff. He's a fellow with the a public opinion and foreign policy analyst at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. These people have helped us out on topics like this before. Carl, we appreciate your time this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Before we start, you don't have that Cubs thing for me by any chance, do you?
I'm just going to go ahead and throw out a number of six and see how it goes.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. That's the way I answered it. Hopefully you can be a little more precise or certain, though, about what our options are with North Korea. So they test an ICBM. Lo and behold, it doesn't blow up on launch and gets to 1,500 miles in the air. It's airborne for 45 minutes. What does that mean, Carl?
So the analysts have all come back, the rocket scientists and people who follow this specifically, and even the U.S. government has come back and said that this was officially an ICBM test. This is a clear progression in its technology and its ability to throw something with a heavy payload over a long distance, although the payload isn't quite proven yet. But it is a big step forward for their program. You know, when I was in Seoul about 6 months ago, the Korean government at the Blue House told me that they expected this kind of launch to come in 2 to 3 years' time, and here we are 6 months later, and it looks like they're far ahead of schedule. And so I think you're going to see governments in both Seoul and Washington start to scramble a little bit on how to respond to this.
Why do they want or need an ICBM or the ability to, say, launch a nuclear weapon at us?
The North Korean perspective is that the United States has a hostile policy towards North Korea. They say that the United States is seeking regime change. They cite kind of the sanctions and military activities that the military joint exercises that the United States undertakes with South Korea, and they think that this is a potential problem for them. And so they're pursuing nuclear weapons, and an ICBM is kind of the ultimate regime guarantee. The idea being that as long as North Korea possesses sufficient capability to strike back at the United States, that the United States will be less likely to attack North Korea, And if North Korea were to launch an attack against Japan or South Korea, then the U.S. would also be less likely to come to the aid of its allies. So in the longer term, it's about driving a clear wedge between South Korea, Japan, and the United States in an eventual attempt to probably reunite the Korean Peninsula under the North Korean regime.
Are they right about the fact that the U.S. is interested in a regime change, that we're working toward that end?
Explicitly, no. I don't think that's the case at all. The United States has said repeatedly that it is not working towards regime change. And we've negotiated time after time with the North Koreans just about denuclearization. And there has been no real activity that would suggest that we're looking for imminent regime change. What is happening, though, is that sanctions are in place and they're trying to tighten them. And one of the biggest misnomers when we talk about North Korea and think about North Korea is that North Korea is the most heavily sanctioned country in the world. That's simply not the case. There are sanctions in place, but none of them are really being enforced, and there's a lot more to do.
Okay, so we do have options. I suggested earlier that we really don't. I mean, are you speaking, when you say sanctions, about U.S. sanctions or the Chinese, other countries?
So the sanctions that need to be put in place, the U.S. is doing a good job on enforcing what's on the books, but China and other countries are not. There's all kinds of gaps in these sanctions, and just recently, the United States has gone for secondary sanctions on a Chinese bank. That is kind of getting the attention of China, and perhaps will hopefully lead China to enforce the sanctions that are on the books in a little bit of a tougher manner. But to say that that's a real option is probably a bit of a stretch.
Pardon me, Carl. I want to cut you off right there. I want to make sure I'm following this. So the sanctions we might impose would be against China. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a set of sanctions called secondary sanctions.
Sure.
And so while we have sanctions in place on North Korea, the secondary sanctions target banks and entities that are based in China but are doing trade with North Korea.
Understood.
So it's a way to cut off the money flow from North Korea out to the outside world, because they're using Chinese intermediaries to do that.
No, the president said that 40% of their trade's with China, so evidently China's helping them out. First of all, is that true?
The numbers behind the trade data is a little bit suspect. Of course, anytime you're dealing with anything about North Korea, everything is a little bit guesswork. It does seem that those numbers are relatively accurate. I believe he cropped them from the New York Times. And so by all intents and purposes, if that number's not correct, it is clear that China is the major player in North Korea's economy.
Why is China helping them out? Why is China so sympathetic to North Korea?
So China's position on North Korea is essentially that, you know, they're a long-time ally. It was forged primarily during the Korean War, and it's a relationship that the Chinese call as one as being as close as lips and teeth. You know, they also have problems with the United States, and their fear is of being encircled. And primarily the fear is that if there were to be regime change and perhaps South Korean-led reunification, then China would see U.S. forces based basically along the Chinese border. So China's trying to maintain North Korea as a buffer state between itself and U.S. forces.
So the president said to us via his Twitter account over the weekend this: North Korea has just launched another missile. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. Perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. Tell me what that means. What do you think about that?
Well, I think what it means is that the president is seeking a way not to take any responsibility for any tough decisions. He said repeatedly that this is a problem for China to solve, but that is clearly not the case. While China may have influence, North Korea is only interested in really dealing with the United States and seeking a solution like this. And I think this is part and parcel to, I think, what has become a bad habit for President Trump, is trying to shift responsibility elsewhere. More troubling is that while he's trying to shift responsibility, saying it's the problem of South Korea, Japan, which are our allies, by the way, and China, we have our Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, saying we need a global response. And even more disturbing is that we have our four-star general in Korea that commands the U.S. forces saying that there's a thin line between armistice and war, and that it's basically self-restraint that is restraining a war from breaking out. So while those three comments, perhaps seen individually, aren't problematic, the fact that people within the administration and in high-level places can't get on the same page with messaging, I think, is a serious problem.
Well, it sounds to me like Donald Trump is doing what Donald Trump does, and that is he's playing them. He's telling the world, and at least the people in the United States who follow him on Twitter, the whole world is watching his words. Okay, China, this is your baby. You need to do it the way you might in a boardroom, the way you might negotiate a deal, you know, trying to exert a little leverage on China. I don't know if that is how politics work. I don't know how that's politics work with the Chinese, but isn't that how that sounds, Carl?
It certainly sounds like that, but I don't think it's going to be successful at all. If he's trying to push China into enforcing sanctions or put on whatever this quote-unquote heavy move is, I don't think it's going to have much in effect. My general sense is that if we're going to go down the road of more sanctions on China, and in other ways, you know, the president has been saying, hinting at some kind of trade war is in the works, looking at steel, looking at other imports. You know, the Chinese are ready for this, and I think the Chinese think that they will come out better from all of this than the United States will.
Carl Friedhoff's on the phone line. He's a fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, obviously an expert on Asia, and say this kind of a crisis or conflict. I'm actually a little confused that he thinks that China would do the heavy lifting for us, since you just said they're so close to North Korea. Maybe they don't see it's in their best interest anyway. They are happy to have North Korea, right?
Happy to have it is probably a little bit strong of a way to put it, but certainly they haven't taken any steps to really restrain North Korea in any way, and that's certainly going to be by design. There's long been a fantasy within the United States that China will step up and solve this problem, and so that kind of fantasizing has not only been played out under the Trump administration. We've seen that happen under previous administrations as well, where they continue to say, well, if only we could get China to implement sanctions. And perhaps that's true, but the U.S. hasn't really taken any steps to try to get or to encourage or force China to more clearly enforce the sanctions on North Korea.
Yeah, but if they seem to be an unwilling player for us in the case of North Korea, how much can we do to China anyway? The president then tweets this: the United States made some of the worst trade deals in world history. Why should we continue these deals with countries that do not help us? Trade between China and North Korea grew almost 40% in the first quarter. So much for China working with us, but we had to give it a try. So it makes it sound like him saying, okay, if China, you won't use your leverage with North Korea, then we're going to stop doing trade with you. Is that compelling to the Chinese? I mean, play that out for me.
I don't think that's particularly compelling to the Chinese. Recently, I was in a meeting with a Chinese official that was here on a visit. And at the end of the meeting, you know, he went through a long, boring talk. And right at the very end, he said, you know, it's always that way. It's always the most noteworthy thing comes at the end. Said, you know, China is ready for a trade war, and we believe that we'll win. So if he's expecting to compel China by this kind of talk, I don't think he's going to be successful.
One last thing for you, Carl. When the president in this one tweet, and shame on me for reading a lot into it, but really it's all you're left with, when he says put a heavy move on, what in the world is that? Is that trade? Is that an invasion? Is that nuclear weapons? What is put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all?
Well, again, I'm hesitant to read into the president's Twitter account because no one is really well aware of what it means in many cases, except perhaps the president himself. But I think the two most likely options when he's talking about a heavy move would be, number one, start to enforce sanctions clearly so that it really hurts kind of the Pyongyang elite, people who are around Kim Jong-un and are financing lifestyles and the missile program. And so that can then begin to be restricted. The second move would be, you know, something like just heavier restrictions outside of sanctions, but also perhaps understanding that North Korea is no longer in its interest and then seeking some kind of dispute, even if that means removing Kim Jong-un from power. That latter is incredibly unlikely. And the first one of enforcing sanctions, I think, is also unlikely.
You wonder if the Secretary of State for the United States picks up his phone the way you and I do sometimes, types in D-O-N, Donald Trump pops up, and then he reads what the president has just said, which may or may not be in concert with what he's doing, and he slaps himself in the forehead and says, oh, no, now how do I do this dance? What a tough job he's got.
Well, yeah, they've certainly been really out of step so far. And, you know, from the rumors that are coming out of D.C., it looks like Secretary Tillerson has been very upset with the miscommunications between them already.
Anything else that I should be asking you or you want to lend to this conversation, Carl?
No, you know, I think the one thing we really need to think about is the realistic options at this point. And I think it serves to point out that as we go along this North Korea story, it often looks to the American public like we're going basically from zero to 100. But the reality is that for those of us who follow North Korea and Asia for a long time, this is basically just another step in escalation. So it's not really that big of a jump. Yeah, certainly the missile test is new and it's threatening, but it's really just an increase along a longer road of increases. How we respond to this is going to be incredibly important. It's very easy to get caught up in kind of the mania of this and mm-hmm. to see it as a major threat. But we have to remember that, you know, we've lived with missile threats from other countries, China and Russia. We've lived with nuclear threats from other countries, again, China and Russia. And, you know, we've relied on our very seasoned and capable diplomats to ensure that these kinds of things don't escalate out of control. So I think just caution on all sides is probably the best road to take.
Well, let me ask you, pardon me, do you have another minute, Carl?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, because, you know, if Syria does something, then we can lob a couple missiles into Syria and say, okay, good, that's what happens. But if you do that to North Korea, does China take that more personally? I mean, literally, should we have some sort of surgical military response in a case like this? A couple of our listeners have questions for you, too. Carl Friedhoff is on the phone. The number's 312-981-7200. Our guest is with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. You get a chance to talk next on WGN. Should the United States have, or should they yet, make some sort of military response to this ICBM test by North Korea?
I think that would be a terrible idea. I've lived in Seoul for 13 years, and when you really are there and spend a lot of time there, it becomes very obvious that South Korea and all of Seoul was within the range of North Korea's artillery. And it's not only South Korea that has to worry, but also Japan. Japan is clearly in range of the intermediate range ballistic missile program that North Korea is running. And so if there were a strike by the United States, even if it were surgical, the potential response towards South Korea and Japan could be overwhelming and could be devastating. You know, you have to think about population centers like Seoul, where in the city limits itself there are 10 million people, but if you include the surrounding areas, it's about 25 million people, which is almost half of the population of South Korea. So the ability for loss of life and damage to business is just really overwhelming. And so for the United States to try to take any kind of military action is incredibly risky, perhaps not for the United States, but certainly for our allies in the region.
They don't want us to respond that way, right?
Certainly they do not. I think that is one of the biggest fears from South Korea and Japan, is that we would respond militarily, or that we would give an indication that we have this intention, and that would be misread by North Korea, and then North Korea would launch a preemptive strike on both South Korea and Japan.
Well, this may be naive, but I've always felt that ding-a-ling, I'm glad he's not my leader, but I mean, he doesn't harm me, so why do I really invest a lot of time in North Korea anyway? Japan, I get. South Korea, I get. But why is this our concern?
So this gets into the U.S. concern, because North Korea has continually threatened South Korea. And in South Korea, we have, or the United States, that is, has 28,500 soldiers. There are families there. There are contractors there who work for the U.S. government. And the same is true in Japan. Not only that, but we have defensive military alliances with both of those countries. And that is something that the United States takes very seriously. In the past, North Korea has killed South Korean soldiers. It has killed several U.S. soldiers along the demilitarized zone. And so the United States wants to be sure that deterrence is strong and that there is no repeat of the Korean War, where North Korea invaded South all along the DMZ and started off a three-year-long war.
Gary, just ask the last question, and then we'll wrap this up. Jump in there, Gary. What did you want to say?
Sure. I'm just curious as to why more people, and it seems like this would be Trump's style, don't try to pressure the Chinese by saying, we have to relook at our whole defensive posture in the region, so we're going to start staging medium-range nuclear missiles in South Korea and in Japan to counter the threat of North Korea. It seems to me the Chinese wouldn't like that and would want to avoid that, and it seems then we have the leverage that we would need to counter North Korea with the Chinese.
What's your reaction to that, Carl?
Yeah, so there were nuclear missiles and nuclear weapons based in South Korea for a long time, but I believe those were removed, I believe, in the late 80s. The reason that we don't have those there now is that, quite frankly, there's not really any reason for them. We have nuclear-capable submarines that are often docked in Japan and then travel throughout the region and can basically strike anywhere in the region from there. So the idea that we would then move these things, kind of land-based missiles, back into either Japan or Korea is really not necessary, because the Chinese are well aware of U.S. capabilities in terms of being able to launch any kind of nuclear strike from there.
Boy, it sounds like such a chess game, doesn't it? If I do this, then they do that, and if they do that, then a third player, it's like 3D chess here, somebody else is going to make a move, and I need to anticipate that. Lastly, for you, Carl, how confident are you that our president or our administration has a handle on this, that they can execute in our best interests here?
Oh, well, right now it doesn't seem like they have a handle on this at all. You know, the statements that have come out, they're not coordinated. There have been no real attempts to kind of change the game in any way. They're going out and continuing to say that we are going to rely on China. And more, and actually this is somewhat comforting, is the fact that they are actually, it seems to be, going back to the old playbook. This was kind of derisively called strategic patience under the Obama administration, a term that the Obama administration officials actually hated, because throughout this time, they have been talking to the North Koreans. There are almost always continuous secret talks ongoing behind closed doors. Sometimes it's the New York Channel, sometimes it's administration officials flying into Asia, and sometimes secretly into North Korea itself to talk to North Korean leadership. And what has come back is that the North Koreans are not interested in doing any kind of deal or talking to us. Basically, they are looking to develop their nuclear weapons because they are very serious about hanging on to them. And so now they're waiting for the United States to come to the realization that these are not for sale, that these are not up for negotiation, and the United States has to figure out what it's willing to accept in order to move forward.
Thanks for your time this afternoon, Carl. We'll be in touch. The story isn't going away. Thanks for helping us out.
All right, thank you.
Carl Friedhoff is an Asian policy expert at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. This is John Williams. Many Americans today are struggling with the same issue that I've been struggling with on the show today. How many Cubs were on the field at any given time in last year's All-Star game? It was just a passing sort of fancy at the beginning of the show that I thought would be easily dispatched by the newsroom.
And now it is a sick obsession.
With my producer, Elif, who's not a sports person, quote unquote. But I really don't think you have to be to, like, find this out. Turns out we're getting all sorts of information here. What with some people being named starters, but then not starting, et cetera, et cetera. But last year, and this is really Steve's fault, because the question Steve pointed out, or the point Steve made was, isn't it interesting how many people were on last year's All-Star team from the Cubs versus this year? Kind of sad, isn't it, Steve?
It's very sad, yes.
Last year, they started Rizzo, Zobrist, Bryant, and Russell in the infield. Wow, all of them Cubs. Dexter Fowler was named a starter but didn't start. I had Jake Arrieta starting, but he did not. I reached out to an expert named my son, who seems to follow baseball more closely than me, and I said, how many were on the field at any given time? And his text is this. Just the four infielders. Arrieta decided not to play in the game. Lester pitched last year, but it was later in the game when the others had subbed out. In 2008, the Cubs had 8 in the All-Star game. Most were pitchers, though. The most the Cubs had on at any given time in last year's All-Star game was 4, according to noted baseball expert, my son.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But I'm not sure that's true. Dan has been holding since, I believe, the third inning of last year's game, and he seems to have more information about this. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Well, I'm going to surprise you, John, but your son is right on the button. I mean, there were 5 elected starters for the Cubs. One couldn't play because he was injured.
Yeah.
There were 2 reserves for the Cubs, only pitchers, no other players. Arrieta didn't pitch, and Lester pitched 2/10 of an inning, gave up 2 runs, by the way, and he pitched in the 6th inning.
2/3
and by that time, the other starters for the Cubs were out. That's exactly right. Each starter, I think, got 2 at-bats. And I think by the 5th inning, all the starters had their 2 at-bats.
And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Chris Bryant hit a home run off Chris Sale? when he was with the White Sox.
I think you're right.
Nice.
Oh, here comes Johnny Come Lately now.
Yeah. Oh, where were you when we needed you, Kevin?
I'm here.
I could have done a radio show if you'd gotten to work sooner today.
No, the question was how many Cubs were on the field
at any given time. And right. I don't think we're – so are we, gentlemen, in agreement then that four is the most?
Well, when they announced the starting lineups.
No, I'm – don't do that, Steve.
Well, they would be on the field.
No.
Well, if you want to get technical, when John Lester was pitching, the Cubs, the regular batters weren't on the field. They were actually sitting
down. Would have never been on the field
again. Exactly. So it's four. There you go.
Four that were in play. So at no point did that starting infield play with a Cub pitcher on the mound. That's what we're saying.
That is correct. Your son is right.
What's your estimated probability of accuracy? How confident are you in that, Dan?
89%.
Wow, very high. But higher than this show ever gets, I got to tell you.
Yes.
Dan, thank you for the call.
Well, thank you. Good to have you back, John.
It's good to be back, sort of. Kevin, you want to double down on that? Elif?
That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
I found another article that I highlighted and I was going to give it to you, but I didn't want to make matters worse.
Right. Well, does the information you found coincide with what we've
No, it
does not.
You just made matters worse.
Walk it in here, Elif. Don't do that to me. Let's see what we got. Oh, boy.
I'm coming.
I will say this, though, that it's probably a good thing that not a lot of Cubs are All-Stars this year.
Why is that?
They need time off. They need it bad.
Is that what they need?
Well, yeah.
I don't know what they need.
If they were All-Stars, they wouldn't need time off. So
okay. But the fact of the matter is, you know what I mean? The team's not playing all that well, and neither are the players. Joe Maddon said this last week. He said it's probably, first of all, they're deserving of it. It's not like anybody's really getting snubbed here. Nobody's particularly.
You haven't heard a hue and cry like, well, wait a minute, where is X?
Not really, no. I think Cub fans are just sort of disappointed there's not a whole bunch of Cubs in the game. I mean, you want to see your team well represented, especially Chris Bryant, who's the reigning NL MVP. He may not even get in. He's trailing Justin Turner in the final vote right now.
So wait a minute. So the one Cub that is going to be in there is
Wade Davis, who's probably is the team's in some ways MVP, or at least been the most reliable, steady player on the roster this year.
What's Wade Davis do?
He's the closer.
Yeah, I knew that.
They traded Jorge Soler for him to the Royals during the offseason.
So Rizzo's not going to be on the All-Star team?
He will not be on the All-Star team.
Do they know how good he is? He's Rizzo, for God's sakes.
That's true, but the National League's first base position is stacked. There's Joey Votto. There's Paul Goldschmidt. There's Ryan Zimmerman, who I believe is the starter this year.
Never heard of any
blah,
of them.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, exactly.
Rizzo.
You've got Rizzo. He's got his own cereal, people. Does Paul Goldschmidt have his own cereal?
No, he's got a beer, doesn't he?
I don't know.
Isn't there a beer called Goldschmidt?
Goldschlager.
That's what it is.
Vodka.
So Elif has just handed me this breaking news about last year's All-Star game. We're going to need to get a sounder. John, it says here, it's the first time since 1985, the Padres, that one team has had five players selected to start the game. Selected being the operative word here, though. Fowler did not play in the game. He didn't play at all, did he, Kev?
I don't recall him playing. No, I think that was when he was on the DL. He had an ankle thing last year.
Yeah, all right.
Hamstring or something.
Okay. By the way, tomorrow, complete coverage of World War II. We'll tell you who the players were and who's winning. We'll have that information for
you. Will
it
be the whole war or just the early years?
By the way, if you're listening to us in Honolulu, good time to turn up the radios.
Something's big about to happen.
Don't want
to.
That would be crickets. It's 2:46, and this truly is WGN. This text is just poured in. I'm enjoying the show today, and I'm anxious to see John Williams with Teddy Roosevelt. We bought our tickets for the College of DuPage show. Well, thanks for that, kids. If you haven't yet, you still can. I think I'm going to join Steve Cochran to talk a little bit more about that tomorrow. But if you have not seen one of our presidential conversations, they are the most enlightening, uplifting thing. I really mean this. I know those of us who support President Donald Trump are frustrated by how contentious things have become, and those of us who don't support Donald Trump are upset with how contentious things have become. Nobody's happy these days. When you see Teddy Roosevelt on stage, you will be happy. You'll believe in the power, the prestige, and the promise of the American presidency. And you'll have a lot of fun. You'll learn a lot. You'll laugh and you'll learn. I say that over and over again. And I've only been doing this for about 10 or 15 years with President Jefferson or President Roosevelt on stage, and every single time I come away feeling better about this little experiment we call America. It really is remarkable. And having been at every one of these shows, I can also say this with confidence. You learn a lot every single time. Like if you've been to one of the Roosevelt shows and say, well, I heard him tell the story about San Juan Hill. Half the time he doesn't even do that story because he's got so many stories. And I can guarantee you the last time we talked to Teddy Roosevelt, nobody asked him what he thinks we should do about North Korea and the ICBM launch, but maybe somebody will ask about that. Roosevelt did not have Twitter, but he would have been perfect for it. He's the one that said, speak softly and carry a big stick. I mean, that's a hashtag. He's the one that took a big cup of coffee and said, that was good to the last drop. And somebody said, oh, I'm going to use that again. The teddy bear is named after Teddy Roosevelt. He said, go ahead and use it, but I don't think this thing's going to go. And those are just the funny little sidebars. I mean, this was a man of prominence, and so anyway, you can tell I'm a fan, right? And I like Jefferson even more. Roosevelt isn't crazy about the fact that on Mount Rushmore, he has to share the space with TJ. He thinks Lincoln should be up there, but he doesn't think Jefferson has any business being on the face of a mountain. So buy a ticket to this thing. Get one for your family and friends, too. Tickets are available at WGNradio.com/events. WGNradio.com/events. Do we have the phone number for this, Elif? Put that up on the screen for me. I'll give you the phone number you can call right now, too, if you want to get tickets to this thing. This is
I can give it.
Oh, hey, jump in there, girlfriend. Go.
It's 630.
Write this down. 630.
942. 4000.
4000. Call that number right now and ask them how many Cubs were. I mean, ask them if there are tickets available for. There are. The 10 o'clock or the 1 o'clock show for our big shtick with Teddy Roosevelt. 630-942-4000. Big shtick, by the way, makes it sound like it's silly. It is never that. It is not shtick like that, but it's his saying, and it is serious and funny at times, too. Literally, there have been times where when he talks about his sons fighting in the war, we have all been brought to tears. They're all true stories that he tells up on that stage.
And he's a really good storyteller.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the last time we were there, he said, well, why aren't you saying something? Why don't you get involved in this? And I thought, dude, you don't need me on that stage. I'll just clutter it up. So go, TJ, go, or TR, rather. We just got a couple minutes here. And this is a subject that we're going to speak about at greater length tomorrow. And that is the Voter Fraud Commission. The President's Voter Fraud Commission. It is amazing how much research has been done on this topic and how little has come up. I mean, the people that look into voter fraud say that over billions of votes cast or potentially cast, the incidence of voter fraud in the United States is virtually nil. I guess if you want to go ahead and look into it, you can. But now some of the states like Illinois are saying, well, we actually don't want to and don't think we should cooperate. Here's CNN. 44 states are refusing to turn over voter fraud information requested by the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. Vice Chairman Chris Kobach, a bipartisan rebuke to a group formed by the president to expose alleged voter fraud in the U.S. elections. That near unanimity is noteworthy. It glosses over the broader point that needs to be made regarding this commission. There is absolutely zero evidence of widespread voter fraud in U.S. elections. None, CNN says, zip. 44 states have refused to give certain voter information to the Trump Commission. Take this study by Loyola Law School professor Justin Levitt, in which he tracked U.S. elections from 2000 to 2014, 14 years we're talking here, in search of voter fraud, or as he put it, specific credible allegation that someone may have pretended to be someone else at the polls. He found 31 such instances out of more than a billion, with a B, a billion votes cast. And yet we are investing time and money looking further into that. It's 2:55. Now, we need to do this and then get ready for Ro and Anna. If you need an experienced and effective real estate agent who can expose your home to the most buyers, create a marketing and offer strategy, and ultimately negotiate the most money possible for your home, then here's our recommendation. This is mine, Amy Kite, with Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Not only are Amy's fees flexible, but you will actually receive an immediate offer on your home. It works like this. Amy helps you negotiate through multiple offers collected because of her stellar marketing plan. But if it does not sell for the price and deadline that you agree to, she will have it bought for cash. Not only that, working with Amy does not obligate you to anything. If she's not doing her job, she lets you out of the contract free and clear. And by the way, she gets personally involved in every single transaction. If she's not doing her job, though, you walk away. Other realtors don't let you do that. Call the only agent I would call to sell my home. And that's Amy Kite at 847-877-9881. 847-877-9881. Or online, go to amywillsellyourhome.com. amywillsellyourhome.com. You can start packing. Oh, and I hit the button and we're ready to roll and I got nothing else to do. That's the end of the show. Let's see. There's one other thing that we were going to mention.
No, you already ended the show. It's over.
Violetta, did you hear any of that story? We got a lot of texts about this, and I have a pile of them here, and I was going to read a few of them. The story about the large-size model who was on a flight, a Delta flight from Dallas. The guy next to her was taking pictures of her because she was large. She was sitting in the middle seat, and he was upset about that. And so he's saying unkind things about her to a friend. She's reading over his shoulder, and she's seeing what he is saying. Plus, I guess he's taken a picture of her. So when they get done with the flight, she comes up to him and says, "Excuse me, do you realize what you were doing?" And sort of puts him in his place. Did you hear that story at all, Violetta?
Yeah, I did hear it. It's disheartening.
Disheartening that the guy acted that way.
But yes. People shouldn't be looking at other people's phones, though.
Yes.
Well, I agree, but also in this day and age, it's common enough that people are going to be looking at each other's technology.
They shouldn't be, though.
I mean, I don't do it personally, but...
So you're reading a private texting conversation between this jerk you're sitting next to on the plane and his friend, and they're saying bad things about you, but they are not sharing it publicly.
Right.
But in order to shame him, you now share it. Well, then who has shamed you? That guy or yourself?
The guy's a jerk, no question. But
Nobody's defending him. But I mean, yeah, he's an idiot. And these poor people have to put up with that kind of crap way too much. But he didn't post the stuff. But to ruin his day, she now outs him by posting what he said.
Right.
She's intruding his private space. Shouldn't be reading somebody's phone in conversation.
Well, she did wait until the end of the flight, which I can appreciate, instead of starting a confrontation before takeoff.
But there's pictures of screenshots of his phone.
And it got really physical on that airplane.
What do you mean got physical?
He was jabbing her in the side.
Well, that's what she said. They'd been moving about. He would every now and then bump into her with his elbows.
You got to give the person in front of you a little kick sometimes.
Well, this is next to her.
Well, I know, but it's tight, tight quarters.
They really are.
Yeah, but when you can't control that.
All right, let's do this. Prioritize the sin. What's worse, what he said in private to the friend fat-shaming that lady, or her outing him to the world?
Probably what he said.
I think maybe her posting the picture was bad, but I...
What was worse?
Rokan,
your
him.
Thoughts.
This is a classic... A-hole on a-hole crime is what this is.
Everybody loses.
Yes.
It really
this is a classic one of those situations where you've got the jerks fat shaming the woman, then the woman, deciding she's going to get even on social media. Everybody wins. Everybody wants to win. Everybody loses when it comes to social media. Just ask the president.
And there we begin the Rokan show. And once again, he's rolling.
Yeah. Oh, you should have seen me. You should have seen me over the weekend. When that CNN video came out.
I thought you were turning off your phone.
I tried.
And what happened?
I didn't work.
Violetta, your job among the many tasks that you're being asked to perform here like put yourself in harm's way at the Lyle Eyes to the Sky Balloon Fest.
Yeah, that didn't work out for her either.
Is going to be to monitor. You are going to be the Ivanka of WGN.
Oh, God.
Your
oh.
job.
She already kind of is. I think they're cousins.
Your job is going to be to monitor your boss's use of the phone.
Yeah. I tried. I did my best. I did my darndest to not pay any attention to the news over the weekend. But what would happen? See, what would happen was I would turn on the phone in the morning, and then all of a sudden things would start
ding,
notifications of things. Yeah. And as soon as it said, whatever the word that was used for the CNN taunting tweet, or and then where Republicans were condemning him, I'm like, I gotta look. We do want to talk, by the way. Richard Roper's in for Anna today. We do want to talk about this guy who put together that GIF, or do you say GIF?
I say GIF.
And how he apologized, and CNN was like, well, all right, we won't mention your name. But that's a really interesting journalistic question, I think.
Well, he posted it on a subreddit, right? I mean, that's how it got started. But I guess you don't use your name. You use a hashtag.
Yeah, his hashtag had the a-hole word in it.
So then, yeah, that's right. I don't know that guy's name. Do you?
No, they haven't done it. Well, we'll talk about that, whether they should release that guy's name, or did CNN try to hold him up? Is this CNN blackmail, as the pro-Trump people are calling it?
I believe the president's son said that. He tweeted that, too. My phone was on over the weekend, too, by
the way. See, Violetta, not just me.
But he didn't say he was turning it off.
I did turn it off.
You turned it back on.
But I didn't turn it on. People need to get a hold of me.
You need to unfollow Donald J. Trump.
I don't even follow him. I just look at my push notifications. Thank you, John.
Have a good show.
And thank you, kids. You guys can go home now. We've already worked half a day.
It's a good effort. Thanks, Rope.
You're welcome. That's the way the millennials like to work.